we kind of treat the city a bit like family, don't we? We're happy to take, but anyone outside the city taking, that is a what are you doing? Like, yeah. Come on. And also driving around Birmingham, like Birmingham is such an incredible city. There is so much going on here any given moment of time. It's like more festivals than any other city happen in Birmingham. It is just incredible. I've hit a network with sort of really senior folks, built some really useful contacts. You look like you're a recent graduate. You're probably not going to be that useful for me. Or I don't know what I'm going to talk to you about because that's not someone I have a lot in common with.
Welcome to B2B, the Business Club podcast, season two. Today, our guest is Henrietta Brilo. Thank you for joining us today, Henrietta.
Delighted to be here.
The youngest ever CEO of the Chamber of Commerce. We'll get into that further a little bit down the line. But initially, would you kindly give us a little bit of an introduction to yourself on a personal level?
Yeah, absolutely. So, as you say, I'm Henrietta. And I'm a Midlander, born and bred, grew up in Rugby, moved up to Birmingham for university. And after about a year to get used to it, I really fell in love with the place, particularly doing something called the Uprising Leadership Programme, which sort of showed me all around behind the scenes in Birmingham, meeting brilliant business leaders, charity leaders in the city, seeing all sorts of different places across the city. And like I say, helped me fall in love with the city and also that idea that you as an individual can drive positive change in the world around you. So those are the sort of two things I've tried to take with me in my career. And now I love to live in Birmingham. I live just outside of Harbourne with my husband and a small cat. And that's me in a nutshell.
Excellent. So on to that point again, the youngest ever CEO of the Greater Birmingham Chamber of Commerce. The Greater Birmingham Chamber of Commerce itself, could you explain its role and its importance to Birmingham and the businesses of Birmingham?
Yeah, absolutely. We're all about helping connect, support and grow local businesses. So we are an independent not-for-profit. We employ around 80 members of staff and they're working with businesses on absolutely everything from answering those questions of how do I get known? How do I find and connect with the right people locally? To what's changing in the world around me? How do I adapt to it? How do I keep on top of those latest trends, latest government policy? What support is there out there for me? How can I innovate and grow? Through to how do I trade internationally and have that voice and seat at the table regionally and nationally. We've been in business for business since 1813, so safe to say we're in it for the long haul and very much committed to that, all things business from startups to multinationals in the Greater Birmingham area.
Excellent. So youngest CEO, so 1813 is a long time for a business to be running. So you're the youngest CEO. So since the books began, so you are the youngest CEO to ever be in charge of the Chamber. How does that feel as a day-to-day? Is it something that's a badge of honour? Is it something that sometimes becomes a little bit annoying as a forefront? How does that sit with you?
Yeah. The trouble with being the youngest anything is you're not young for long. Like, you can't rely on that.
I'm it.
It's a nice accolade. You know, look great in that press release announcing me becoming chief exec. But it's not necessarily something I think about day to day, although I do get reminded of it quite often.
You don't?
Yes, it helps that I look like a 17-year-old. So, you know, every so often I get like, oh, I didn't even think you were that old. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, something stopped being ID'd in the last couple of years, though. That's been a big change for me. You know, I suddenly get, gosh, maybe I am starting to look my age.
Yeah, no, I wish I could relate, but I can't. So with that title, obviously you've got the future faces here as well. Do you ever look over your shoulder and look who's coming, who's up behind you, whether anyone's going to take that crown? Is it something that ever enters your mind when you see these young professionals?
Oh, they're doing it already. They're incredible. Even just this year, so we've got a young professional division of the Chamber called Future Faces, really aimed at your sort of 18 to 35-year-olds who are sort of building their careers in the city. And they're terrifying. There's about 600 of them. They're incredible. And our overall Greater Birmingham Young Professional of the Year award winner, so that awards for young professionals in the city, amazing lady called Santina Bunting. She's 19. She's a 19-year-old apprentice. And the impact she's making in her organisation, in the charities she works with, what she's doing around the city, it is just incredible. So, yeah, I'm not just looking over my shoulder. They're starting to scale ahead of me, I think, these young professionals coming through.
So looking at your research before we met today, I'd seen that you'd been to university and your university qualifications initially was English literature, which was then followed by public management. So quite a mix. Mm-hmm. So you're very business now, aren't you? So English literature being very art, where was the kind of divide? Why did you do that and then that, essentially?
Oh, so I'm loving literature. I actually still write for fun. It's terrible. No one is ever going to read anything I write. I rarely finish anything, but I find it really quite mindful, sort of just creating something and getting into a world. And I just love English literature. Particularly, it was sort of older works, everything from sort of Chaucer to be a massive nerd about it. 17th century sonnet sequences and prose romances. Absolutely fascinating, because what it shows you is like the language we use has changed, the sort of culture around us has changed, cultural norms might change. People, we're fundamentally the same. The same jokes like reappear throughout history, the same sort of tropes, types of people, and it's just absolutely fascinating. So loved doing English literature. And then when I was doing English literature, that's when I got involved in the Uprising Leadership Programme, which was all about teaching young people how to make positive change in the world around them, make a positive impact. And through that, while I was still at uni, that got me interested in this whole thing known as policy and campaigning. So public policy, what is it? I had no idea that world existed sort of through school and into university, but that what drives how we do things, what our institutions are doing, the way the world works around us. And through that, I got into public management. So at University of Birmingham at the time, there wasn't a public policy course, but that was the closest that they did. Oh, okay. So wanting to stay in the city, that's what I ended up doing. It was brilliant because it meant I was actually on that course with a lot of practitioners who are actually doing in the policy world, learnt a lot from them, built up some great contacts, and was able to stay in the city.
So I suppose that gave you a good grounding then for kind of what you do now, and kind of going off script a little bit. The world itself, as it is currently, the government, councils, how does this sit with your experience? Do you kind of look at this, go, oh, I understand how this goes. I can see how this is going. Because to me as a small business owner, it looks like absolute chaos.
Yeah, I'd love to say the last few years have been really predictable and I knew exactly what was coming, but that would be a big lie. So, you know, we've had Brexit, COVID, energy crisis, cost of doing business crisis, masses of elections going on. And then where we are now with obviously implementation of the tax changes that came through at the autumn budget, Trump, USA, geopolitics, all of it. It's a great big whirlwind. But yeah, that grounding does help with going, okay, who are the key people we need to talk to get decisions made that are going to best support business? And how do you best put that case forward? So yes, it does help in terms of being able to get that message across, but also then that communicating back, you know, trying to keep it nice and simple. All right, what does this actually mean for businesses? What's noise? What's political chatter? What's the headlines? And what's the stuff that's actually going to really make a difference for local businesses? So yeah, being able to pull on that background in what we do today, where we're both representing businesses and being their voice, and then going, okay, what do we need to spot that's changing and build programs to directly support those businesses and help them on the ground, really does help bridge that divide.
Yeah. Because obviously with the new government, and I see on LinkedIn, I see these Colchin, for example, there's a lot of activist work in trying to keep places open, community centres, stuff like that. So how challenging is it with a new government to find those channels of communication to actually have things actioned and implemented and get your voice heard? So obviously, Great Birmingham Chamber, you are the second city. So outside of London, you know, it's a major voice for the government to listen to. Is that an easy thing to kind of communicate back?
Well, the nice thing about being an accredited Chamber of Commerce is we're also part of the British Chambers of Commerce. So we're all independent organisations on the ground, sort of flexing what we do to support local businesses, but we're accredited by the British Chambers, and central part of their role is that engagement with central government. So all the way in the run-up to the election, building relationships with the opposition, getting to know who are those key people going to be. And then once in post, sort of leveraging those relationships. Is it easy? No. Do we always get listened to? No. But keeping that relationship and the ability to put the evidence on the table and go, too far, mate, you need to find a way of getting this back and making sure you're supporting businesses alongside driving that vision that you have for the country, is absolutely something that gives us access to. We tend to focus more of our time in the region, so working very closely with West Midlands Combined Authority, West Midlands Mayor, local authorities, local authority leaders, MPs in the region, where again, totally cross-party, apolitical. We work with all those stakeholders on just giving that, here's what businesses are thinking and feeling, and here's what they need to support their growth.
Okay. So was it 2015 when you actually joined the Chamber?
Actually, it was back in 2012. Started as an intern.
Wow. So what's that, we're on 13 years?
Yes, 13, terrifyingly, yeah. Yes.
So working your way through the ranks, becoming a part of the furniture a little in that kind of time. So your ambition, was it always that you would be at the top of this organisation? Was that once you were in it, was that something you looked at and went, that's what I want to do?
Absolutely not. And I'd love to say I've always had a 5-year plan and I know where I'm going next, but I've just been making it up as I go along, to be honest, when it comes to my career. I've always had a sort of approach of, it's not up to you to tell you that you're not ready. If you see something that you're interested in, just apply for it. And the worst thing that can happen is you get turned down. Might get a bit of feedback as well that helps you do the next thing you're applying for. So I've always taken that approach. So as I started as an intern, worked my way up to being a senior policy and patron advisor. And then I was reporting directly into the chief executive. So I'd sort of hit as far as I could go in my career. This was about back in 2014. So I did leave the chamber for a bit to work with the National Housing Federation. And I was their external affairs manager for the West Midlands. And I was ridiculously young for the role. I was 24, had braces, that's it, look young now, literally look like a teenager there. And really didn't think I'd get the job, but I did. And it gave me that sort of step up and into a platform at a higher level. That was maternity cover role. So when that was coming to an end, just so happened that our new chief exec at the chamber, my predecessor, Paul Faulkner, was just starting. And he wanted someone in a senior role to lead that policy and campaigns activity.
Okay.
And I'd kept on good terms with my old boss. And I always say this to anyone I mentor, anyone I support around sort of careers advice, just keep on good terms with wherever you go, your past managers, because do you know what? The world's a very small place and you'd never know when someone might pick up the phone and go, oh, I know something that'd be perfect for you.
Yeah.
And they did just that. So I think you should apply. Thought it might be a bit weird going back, but I thought, hey, why not? Let's see what happens. Got the role and it was absolutely fantastic. Right, so leading policy and campaigns, but also relationship management for our patrons, who are your sort of big 40 biggest civic organisations in the city. That was great for a couple of years. Then the opportunity came up to apply for the chief exec role. Again, didn't think I'd get it. Thought my board would take one look at me and go, yeah, we probably need an experienced chief exec in the current environment, but thanks for trying. Thought someone else would probably get it that I could learn from and sort of keep developing my career that way. Also, at the back of my mind, a sort of thing of, well, you never know if you're going to be the best candidate or not if you don't go for it. Threw my hat into the ring, got it, and then had to figure out how to do it.
so that was my next question. So obviously, to take the role at the time that you did is probably the most turbulent time in business in the world, let alone the UK or the Midlands, obviously on the back of COVID. Are you pretty much knee-deep in COVID then? Was it 2021?
Absolutely, start 2021.
So we're in knee-deep in that. So where do you even begin with that? Where did you go, okay, this is the starting point?
Yeah, it was an interesting challenge. Because like I said, I was learning how to be a CEO full stop. And in an environment that no CEO had ever experienced before. Because the world was sort of figuring out, what does life look like post-COVID, for a Chamber of Commerce? People want to be together in person anymore? Do they want to be sort of doing networking together? How do you connect meaningfully if you're only through a screen? Staff, our team, we employ 80 people here. Everyone's been working from home. What does the future hybrid working look like? What are the regulations saying versus what our customers and our team are ready for? All of those different things were coming into the mix. And what we were doing had just fundamentally changed over those couple of years. We pivoted so quickly. And it was then the, what are we pivoting back to? What's the new normal look like? So yeah, it was pretty challenging, I have to say. I learned a lot very, very quickly. Got some fantastic colleagues who were just brilliant at sort of coming together as a team and go, how do we figure this out together? And how do we work together to navigate this? Because again, one of those joys and challenges of being a chamber is you got to respond to that external environment operationally as an independent not-for-profit. And you've also got to respond to it of, how do you help businesses through it? So you're not just thinking about yourselves and your operations, you're constantly looking at that external of, well, what does this also mean for the wider business community? Yeah. How do we adapt, we deliver to support them?
And how did you find that? So there's 80, we've got 80 direct employees here. How did you find taking over a role and then having to lead people like that? So obviously in your other roles, was that such a pivotal thing or?
Yeah, so I've been managing people since my mid-20s, but not managing organisations. That is a whole other ballgame. And also the change in dynamic from being one of part of a team to all of a sudden leading an organisation. And if I'm honest, I felt pretty uncomfortable for about the first 18 months thinking of myself as a leader.
Yeah.
It was sort of a bit of a mindset change of how do I do this? How does this all work? and sort of resetting dynamics within the organisation as colleagues were adapting to the, okay, this is going to be a slight change in this relationship.
Yeah.
So I learned a lot very quickly, I think it's fair to say. Definitely had sort of high points and low points along the way. Like to think I hid the low points pretty well externally, but my poor husband definitely got the brunt of the, oh my God, what am I doing? Yeah. But no, it was, like I said, probably the best possible training grounds to be thrown in the deep end in that way.
Yeah, yeah. Suppose you learn more, don't you, in times of crisis or in tougher times than you do if you just came into the role and coasted. So no, that's good. So in regards to, I know people have talked about imposter syndrome and stuff like that. I've seen other podcasts where you discussed that. I don't think that seems to be much of a problem for you, or hasn't been, has it? But when we spoke to Colchin, he was saying that he's had, when he was at WM, he'd had experiences around his accent and his dialect and basically being told to tone it down. Have you ever found any kind of hit any walls in regards to age or region or anything for yourself in business?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
I'd people very, in no uncertain terms, telling me they thought I was too young and inexperienced to be appointed as chief exec and would probably fail in the role.
Oh, really?
Yep, just purely based on age. And, you know, again, I can see where some of those doubts would have come from externally. Difficult environment, following in the footsteps. My brilliant former boss, Paul Faulkner, had come in as previously been chief exec of Aston Villa, so already a big figure on the stage region, though. And then there was me, who a lot of people in the business community, particularly our really close partners, were like, I knew that little intern from, you know, sort of 10 years ago. I'm like, what are you doing running this place? So there were definitely doubts to come up against. And that, again, you pretend it doesn't impact you. You're sort of in the moment, just go, I'll show you. Don't you worry about it. No problem at all. And some of those people who perhaps were detractors at the beginning are now some of my biggest advocates, which is, you know, okay. Brilliant to see that turn around.
So it's nice you've been able to turn that into a driving force rather than let it push you down. Let it get behind you, kind of push you forward.
Yeah, I'm quite stubborn. But it's the thing of, if I'm told I can't do something, I always look back at it and go, well, I'm going to give it my best. I'm going to show you I can't I? And it does, yeah, it has worked in that case of, like I say, turning around some of those early detractors. But then even earlier in my career, like I say, I've always looked young as well as being young in the roles that I've been doing. So, you know, my roles, whether it was External Affairs Manager of National Housing Federation or Director of Policy at the Chamber, a lot of my job was spent engaging chief execs. So I was the sort of organisational lead for working with these big chief execs, big organisations. And there'd be sort of roundtable discussions, events, whatever it be, I'd walk into. And all of a sudden, I'd be finding it really hard to network. You know, I'd go and introduce myself to someone, straight away they'd be looking around, you know, looking for someone else to speak to in the room. And I'd be sort of blaming myself and going, what is it? What is it I'm doing that's not capturing their attention, that's not like everyone else who's finding it really easy? And after a while, I realised it was just, I don't look like a senior leader. They're making a bit of an unconscious bias judgment of, oh, do you know, I've hit a network with sort of really senior folks, built some really useful contacts. You look like you're a recent graduate. You're probably not going to be that useful for me. Or I don't know what I'm going to talk to you about because you're perhaps not someone I have a lot in common with. So that was really hard, understanding that perhaps it wasn't always my fault, going into a room that, actually, I did find it harder than others. There are other things at play. But then also learning how I could turn that to my advantage and find those ways of going, well, if I know I'm going to have to work harder, what are those first 30 seconds? How can I be really engaging, really energetic, get people to sort of want to have a conversation with me and build that network out rather than finding, oh, this is just really depressing every time I go to a networking event.
So what did that look like? What did you... Without doing a magic trick tour or something.
Let me show you what I prepared then.
Yeah. Watch this, everyone.
It was around being really well informed, asking the right questions. Do you know what? People love talking about themselves. Ask them three really good questions about them and their business, and all of a sudden they're going to really want to talk to you. And then that's been really useful. So I've always really enjoyed connecting dots. It's so key to what I do here at the Chamber.
Yeah.
You know, whether it's talking to a business or a stakeholder about what they're working on and going, you need to talk to these people. These people will be a great partner for you. Did you know this is happening over there? And being able to be that connector, like I say, in those conversations, all of a sudden is this is really useful. This is a really good person to have in my network.
Okay. Because you find that as well with Brummies in particular. We are a very affable people, aren't we? We're very approachable. And a lot of our guests, even though some of them found fame in certain quarters, doing wonderful things, they're still so down to earth and so easy to talk to. Do you find that as a Birmingham, it's a regional thing that it's quite easy working in the chamber to speak to people, and people are quite...
Oh, absolutely. I mean, obviously, I'm very biased, but we have a great business community here. But I think people really care. Something I really find about businesses in Birmingham is they care about the city, they care about the wider region, they care about young people in the city, or they might care about particular charities. There's something just beyond themselves and their business that they're really passionate about too. And I think that's just a brilliant foundation for a great business community.
Yeah.
Okay. So you spoke earlier about being a trustee. You're a trustee for more, or have been for multiple organisations throughout your career. In addition to mentoring, supporting others in various roles, what is it about helping others that you find so important?
Oh, I love it. It's, firstly, I get a lot out of it personally, but also I've been helped a lot in my career too. There's been a lot of people who've given up their time, given up their knowledge, introduced me to people, helped me out when I was just getting started. In fact, it was a mentor who first introduced me to the Chamber when I was still a student. Brilliant Mark Reeves, who was previously at Reach PLC. There's been fantastic people who've supported me along the way. So today I'm a trustee of the Aston University Aston University STEM Education Trust now, supporting the new math school there. At University College Birmingham, I'm a governor, and I'm a mentor for the University of Birmingham Alumni Mentoring Programme, as well as various other bits and bobs that I'll dip into over the year to volunteer with. And it's all back to that. It's all back to saying, how can I help young people who are just starting out, perhaps with similar things that I don't even know that I know, but they've never come across because they're still in education, or help those organisations that are shaping those young people to give them the best possible opportunities.
Excellent. And you've recently, the Chamber recently, has entered into a relationship with Birmingham City, hasn't it?
It has.
Would you like to tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, we're absolutely delighted about this. So Birmingham City Football Club have joined us as a patron of the Greater Birmingham Chamber of Commerce. So that's our sort of top tier of membership. It's where our sort of leading civic organisations are really committed to the growth of the city, a part of, and we're delighted to be working with them based on championing their plans, which are pretty exciting. You know, £2 billion sports quarter investment for the city is the sort of big vision that they're looking at.
Yeah.
Also driving brand Birmingham. Like, Birmingham is such an incredible city. There is so much going on here any given moment of time. It's like more festivals than any other city happen in Birmingham. It is just incredible. Plus all the major sporting events. Then you've got everything happening in Digbeth Lock Studios and Stephen Knight's work, Peaky Blinders. There is so much going on. It's so exciting. And working with the Blues is part of what we're doing, is championing the city, and them going out and about around the world with Birmingham literally in their name is a big part of that.
Yeah, because when we spoke to PJ previously, it came up with the self-depreciating natural tone of Brummies, that it seems to be that what we do is we put ourselves down, don't we, and we don't really shout about the city. Is that quite important to you in the Chamber, that the city gets spoken about highly rather than kind of Birmingham?
Yeah, absolutely. I think we kind of treat the city a bit like family, don't we? We're happy to take the piss, but anyone outside the city taking the piss, and that is a what are you doing? Like, yeah. Come on, back in your box. I think the city, it's had a few sort of bumps along the way when it comes to its own image. Like, you look at, let's say, the Commonwealth Games in 2022, and I was down there at the opening ceremony, and it just felt electric. And it was the first time that this sort of mass performance really showed this is who we are as a city. So it's sort of taught, if you haven't seen it, I think you can still check it out somewhere, probably on the iPlayer.
Yeah.
But it really was sort of, here's the heritage and history of the city. Here are some of the big icons of the city. It was loud, it was colourful, it was confident, and a little bit self-deprecating. Lots of fun in there too. And it felt like, you know, now's the time the city's really building on that. And then obviously we had the headlines around Birmingham City Council. And it felt a bit like, at that point, a bit of deflation, a bit of that.
Yeah.
And it's been tough, particularly for our hospitality and visitor economy businesses in the current environment. So what we want to do is go, let's get that back. Let's get back that confidence, because all those things that make this city great and such an exciting place to be, they're still here. So pull them out, champion them, shout about them, get them in the headlines rather than, you know, the other stuff that we'd rather not talk about.
Yeah.
Well, pretty much done. So it's really, what does the future hold for yourself? Are you hoping to be around long enough to be the oldest CEO of the Chamber, or?
I hope not. Don't think that's healthy. No, I think I love what I do. So I really, really do. It's brilliant. We're currently working on our next 5-year business plan and strategy. And I think time where I stop having lots of ideas and feeling inspired by my colleagues, my members, and, you know, looking at that, what can we do next and how can we help sort of improve the way we support businesses and drive that sort of energy and confidence in the city. Once I'm out of ideas, time for me to go. Or if someone grabs me and goes, and, you know, come on, probably about time now. New for fresh, time for some fresh ideas. But
15-year-old hotshot with her own.
Yeah, that's it. The next precocious person coming on through.
Yeah.
Because I think that's it. I think, you know, everyone's got a shelf life, right? And everyone's got, after a certain amount of time, you need fresh ideas and energy. But certainly for the next couple of years, I've got plenty to keep me going.
Oh, brilliant. Well, thank you ever so much for your time today, Henrietta. It's been a pleasure to talk to you. Best of luck with the future. And thank you.
Fantastic. Thank you very much.
Thanks a lot.